This is Lisa Niver from We Said Go Travel, and I'm so honored and excited to be here with the prolific writing professor, Susan Shapiro. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Great to be in LA.
I know. I'm so excited to actually see you live at Zibby's bookstore today.
Oh, my former student.
Well, she is also prolific. She must have learned well from you.
She mentioned me in her fantastic memoir. She talks about taking my class where she first got published.
Oh my gosh, I did read Bookends. You're right. She totally talks about you. We have a lot of connections because I know in your book, The Forgiveness Tour, you talk about the Los Angeles Press Club.
Yes, I've done great events there. I love the LA Press Club.
I love the LA Press Club too. So one of the things, maybe everybody might not be so familiar with you, but you have written 17 books.
I always say that I've written, I'm the author, co-author of 17 books my family hates.
I think you also say you're only really a writer when you start writing things that your family hates.
Yeah, one of the rules for my class is that the first piece you write that your family hates means you found your voice.
Oh, when means you found your voice. Yes. You have a lot of very clever, pithy statements. And even your class, I love, what does it say about your class about for people?
The instant gratification takes too long method, where the goal of the class is to write and publish a great piece by the end of the class. Many people do.
I'm sure they do. I know so many people that have loved your books. I mean, the book Bible, I think it's a great name for it because people really use that to get published.
Thank you. And Byline Bible also. Byline Bible is to help people publish newspaper, magazine, literary short pieces. And the book Bible is for, I tackle 20 different book genres.
It's really incredible. I know. So just to stay with the Byline Bible for a minute, you talk about the instant gratification takes too long. Can you say a little bit for people that are wondering about taking your upcoming class this summer? I know you focus a lot on helping people. What does it mean to pitch versus write? And, you know, why you, why me, why now? Like, you're obviously giving amazing education. So what happens in the class that's coming up?
Well, what's really exciting about the online classes, because I taught in person for 25 years and I improvised during the pandemic, and this turned out to be like the most exciting. I can't even believe how much fun the online classes are and how successful. So the goal of the class in 5 weeks is to publish a piece in a good newspaper, or magazine, or literary journal and get paid for it. So through trial and error during the pandemic, what I found was that what people love the most was meeting editors, because especially people who are outside of New York just never get a chance to meet people from the New Yorker, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Magazine, and they just don't know who to pitch. They don't know which editor to try. So what I started doing is I started having as many great editors as I can during the class. And what people hated the most was in my long 15-week, 4-hour-a-week classes, we used to read long pieces that people wrote, you know, Modern Loves or, you know, 1,000-word pieces. And people hated that online. They just thought it's really boring. So what I started doing is during the pandemic, it seemed as if there was a switch where instead of wanting full fleshed out pieces, a lot of editors would prefer short pitches. So you say the title of your piece and what your piece is about, as you said, why me, why you, why now? And a lot of editors were saying yes, and they prefer to see the pitch first with the title of the piece and the subtitle, one line about you. So they like short pitches. So I thought, since what people like the most is meeting editors and what they like the least is reading long pieces, let's see if we could do pitches. So the first time I tried it, it was like a miracle. I mean, literally, I think out of 40 people in a class, like 30 got published right away. And we're talking, by the way, people in LA, it was the LA Times, the New York Times, New York Magazine. I mean, $500, $1,000. And then Washington Post. And then people started selling books. Like they would publish a short piece and an editor would be like, I love this. Is there a book in it? So it just got so exciting. So I thought, this rocks, you know, like this is amazing. And what's really interesting is a lot of my students in New York just want a refresher course. So they started zooming in. And I didn't realize that this other great thing is going to happen, which is anybody that's getting published, like the 5-week class is $500. So everybody that's making $500 or more takes the class again because they want to meet 15 new editors. And I've had students, I had one student that said one of the editors who pays $500 a pop, she said she has done 12 pieces in a row for him. So it's just, it's like this amazing thing that happened. And what's really interesting is it's not over, not only all around the country now, but I've had Japan, Malaysia, Vietnam, Brussels, India. And it's so funny because on one Zoom, you'll see people from Asia and it's light out and they're outside on their balconies in the morning. And in the same Zoom in Brussels and Italy, it's night and it's the same Zoom and you can see that it's dark. And what they say, you know, and so they're night owls, but what people say is that, you know, even if it's getting up really early or staying up late, there's really no other way to meet all these editors. And I'm constantly switching them around because they're all switching around themselves. So it's a really, so it's perfect for a beginner. I mean, I've had 14-year-olds and I've had 90-year-olds in different fields. So it's perfect for a beginner who just doesn't know where to start because you get these great editors that'll just say the first week, it's just an intro. They'll just say, okay, this is what I want. I'm looking for short, funny pieces that are 700 words that play off the news. And this is what I don't want. And could you, and they're so specific and it's exciting. And then interestingly, I've been getting lately a lot of book authors whose agents and editors say to them, okay, your book is coming out. Now you have to do short pieces. Go try to publish a few short pieces in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Boston Globe, Washington Post. And they're like, how do I do that? And they're like, take Sue's class. Cause a lot of my editors know I do this all the time and agents. So I've had a lot of authors who you would think, you know, they certainly know how to write, but they just don't know how to pitch this specific thing. So it turns out I get this really fascinating mix of people. And I've got a lot of students who've taken my classes before. And what's so funny is they say, okay, I took it last time and I published three pieces, but are there the same editors coming? And I said, well, there's some of the same editors because if they keep buying stuff for my students, that's the goal. So I'm going to keep having them come. But I said, what? There were 15 and you only sold work to three. So that leaves 12 that you didn't get a yes from yet. So it might be worth it to take again. And then they take it again and get more clips. So it's sort of turned into this very, I didn't expect it because I'm kind of a technophobe. So I didn't expect it, but it's really fun. And it's fun. And I also feel like people have been publishing like some really important stuff, especially during the pandemic. There was a lot of brilliant George Floyd pieces, including a book that came out of it. There's a lot of, you know, the stuff, the anti-Asian horrible slurs that were happening, the anti-Semitism people have taken on, a lot of medical misconceptions concerning the, you know, what was going on with the pandemic, very, you know, a lot of abortion stuff. So I feel like important work is coming out of it too, which is so cool.
Wow. I'm ready to sign up. It sounds fantastic.
Cool.
I know one of the things that I've read about you and is in, I forget which book, maybe it's in both, is you talk about write the story only you can write. Can you talk a little bit more about what does that mean?
Yeah, what happens is I think that some people, it's kind of like do a straight A paper where they'll write something well, whether it's the humiliation essay, which is write about your most humiliating secret, or the op-ed assignment, which is it really pisses me off when. You know, they'll write something and it's well written and it's well thought out, but you've just heard it before. So yes, we know that war is bad and that, you know, COVID sucks and that breakups hurt and public schools don't have money, you know, so we already know that. So it's like, tell us something we don't know. And so I try to, you know, one of the things, everybody wants me to just do it on Canvas and just tape everything and just like, you know, have people be able to press a button on my website and have access to the classes. But truthfully, I think the reason it works is I'm a really tough critic. So, and I think that that's part of why people have luck because, you know, I'll read a pitch and I'll say, you know, yes, this is smart. It's boring. I've heard it before. What can you tell me? And I'll start asking, you know, I've been in therapy a million years. So I'll start asking really intrusive questions and they'll uncover something. And I'll be like, oh my God, now that I never heard. So pitch that. And, you know, so I think you have to, you know, it's not like getting an MBA or a medical degree, a law degree, where you, you know, you follow a certain path and you're just going to be successful. It's complicated. And there's no, you know, people, basically editors have to fall in love with what they're reading. And, you know, if they're going to decide if they buy a piece or not. So, you know, I help my students figure out, you know, is this original? Is it something new? Is there something, you know, we haven't heard before? Is it provocative? I think it's some Arthur Miller who said, the only thing worth writing is the unspoken and the unspeakable. You know, so I try to get people away from their, I come from a confessional poetry background. So try to get people away from, you know, their comfort zone and writing things that are too easy, and to take a risk and be more provocative.
So you brought up about a lot of years of therapy, which reminds me of your book that I loved so very much, The Forgiveness Tour.
Thank you.
And for people that aren't familiar with it, I mean, for me, I really loved that book and the journey you went on through different faiths. I'm also Jewish, and I just think for myself, I have a memoir coming out, and the whole piece about forgiveness doesn't mean what someone else did is okay really spoke to me. So I don't know if you could tell people that haven't had the opportunity yet to read The Forgiveness Tour a little bit about the journey you went on.
Thanks. Well, so the big question with The Forgiveness Tour was, what if someone who you care about, who's important in your life, hurts you and they refuse to apologize? And can you forgive them? And that's what happened to me. And it was really like this confusing, mind-boggling situation, because I wanted to forgive. But when I said, I think you owe me an apology, he said, I'm sorry for the imaginary crime you think I committed. So that's, you know, not so great. That makes me want to commit a real crime. So I was trying to, I really struggled with it for a long time. That the book took 10 years to finish. So I was really trying to figure that puzzle out. And it just so happened at the time I was working at Holy Apostles Soup Kitchen with a really brilliant Reverend, Liz Maxwell. So I happened to be asking her. And so she was explaining to me the concept of forgiveness. And, you know, when Jesus said, forgive them for they know not what they do. And so she explained that to me. And then I have all these rabbis in my life from, you know, conservative to Hasid to reform. And I asked their opinion. There were really fascinating stories about, I think in Judaism, you have to, you're mandated to forgive. And if somebody asks your forgiveness three times and you don't give it, then you have to ask forgiveness for not forgiving. So that was sort of this interesting concept. And then in the meantime, I had a friend who was Hindu and actually gave me really brilliant sort of a Hinduistic viewpoint and Buddhist. So I really wound up asking people from all religions to explain to me their concept of forgiveness and can you forgive somebody who doesn't apologize? And just as I started figuring out I can and how I could do it. And by the way, you could forgive someone and decide never to see them again in your whole life. So forgiving someone doesn't mean that you have to continue the relationship in any way. So just as I was at the point where I was about to be able to forgive without wanting to see the person again, they came back and apologized. So it was kind of like a mind-blowing. I mean, it sort of pissed me off because one of the first critics of the book, I think on like Goodreads or whatever, said, I really liked it, but I didn't like the ending. There was like a happy ending and I wanted it to be more realistic. And I'm like, I waited 10 years until I had a happy ending because I didn't want to write this, you know, manically depressive book about someone who never gets the apology they need and is bitter and angry. So I finally figured it all out and they were complaining that it was too happy an ending, but it was, you know, I waited a long time for that ending.
I think that's a really important story for aspiring writers to hear, that everything doesn't have to happen right away. And I think you talk about that in your class, that, you know, you're kind of only one yes away from it working, that
Right. And there's also a difference when I say instant gratification takes too long, I'm talking about very short pieces. So I'm talking about there are editors who will buy 300, 400, and 500 word pieces, you know, and 1,000 word pieces, which are 3 or 4 pages. And I think absolutely within 5 weeks in my book, Byline Bible, get published in 5 weeks. So I can absolutely teach somebody how to do that in 5 weeks. A book is a different animal. And there's certain kind of books that I think one can do in 6 months or a year, but there's some books that, I mean, my first novel was, it took 13 years from start to finish. So instead of a book launch, it got a bok mitzvah. So, you know, there are certain kinds of,
You're so
books
funny. You had a book mitzvah?
Yeah, I had a book mitzvah and we actually had a cake and people lit candles, came up and lit candles, all the people that sort of helped me with the, you know, with a book over the years. But so I've been doing this for a long time and I did a lot of therapy and I've had a lot of mentors. So what's actually exciting about teaching and about writing the writing guides is that it feels like all my mistakes are worth something. Cause it took me, I was writing full-time when I was 20 and my first real book, Five Men Who Broke My Heart, came out when I was 43 years old. So that took a really long time to figure it out. So what's so great is that all the mistakes that I made and all, you know, it took so long, but so I could use everything that I learned to help other people so that they don't have to go through all the suffering. And also, you know, there are some shortcuts and there's some things that, you know, that I didn't realize for a long time, like what is your goal? And you could have a different goal for each piece or each book, you know, but everybody wants to have like some standard rule and there is no standard rule. You know, what do you want? What's going to make you happy in your life? I mean, for my classes, you know, I ask people, what's your goal? If you've never had a clip, sometimes it's just really cool to get paid for your clip. But some of my students already have clips, so they want to give themselves a promotion and write for a better place. Some people want to change the world with their opinion, you know, or sometimes I have doctors and therapists who want to impart wisdom during a rough time. Some people, I want to sell my book. So let's think of a short piece that's going to get editors and agents interested in your book. So I think that based on my own, you know, rejections and failure for so many years, I think that I could work with writers on any stage and sort of help them get to the next step.
So talking about things that have a long process, I know that you had written about Barbie and that you had 68 Barbies and the movie's coming out. And I loved your piece in The Sun about Barbie.
Thanks. And I just did one for Tablet. And I'm working on another piece too about why Barbie's a feminist and what the women's movement always got wrong about her.
That's a great piece. I mean, I think it's really interesting how people are just mesmerized by Barbie.
Yeah, there's good reasons. I mean, she was really very, it was a very prescient, important role model. And, you know, she came out in 1959 at a time when a real life woman could not get a credit card in her own name to buy a car or an apartment. And then you have this teen model who has not only one job, soon becomes, you know, the choices, a college grad, a nurse, an astronaut, you know, has all these different professions, has her own dream house, right. Ken did not buy the dream house. There's no father in the picture. She had her own dream house. She had her own car. Pretty soon she had her own airplane. And that was really, you know, that didn't exist. And it's sort of interesting because I know for myself, you know, that was there were really cool fantasies attached, which, you know, and it was very empowering. And a lot of people, I don't think, realize how empowering it was. I mean, it really wasn't until 1974 that a woman was able to get a credit card in her own name without a father or husband co-signing. So, and by that point, at that point, there were Black Barbies and there were President Barbies. And, you know, so Ruth Handler, the woman who invented it, really, you know, she was very ahead of her time. She was really an important trailblazer. And I don't think people realize that she made the doll in her own image.
Oh, I had read part of a story you did and I knew her name, but I did not realize it was so much in her own image. That's amazing.
Yeah, because she was, for a lot of interesting reasons, at a very young age, her family gave her a car. She had her own car at 16, where she found her husband, the guy that she liked, and she was the one who proposed to him. And her family let her go out to California as a teen and work at Paramount Pictures. And she was living in an apartment with girlfriends. And this is like the 30s. So this is someone who had a very unusually independent life. And then her kids were named Barbie and Kenneth. So she named them after her. And she was a clothes horse. She was a workaholic and a clothes horse who loved jewelry and makeup. So she really, there was a lot of stuff in her own life. She had experienced anti-Semitism. And so I think it was very important to her to, like, she put out a Black Barbie in 1968 during the race riots. I think that was a really important statement, you know, so a lot of people don't understand how prescient and important the doll really was.
I know we're going to have to close soon. I think I could talk to you for hours, but can you tell people a little bit about your new book that's coming in November?
That's called American Shield, and I'm co-authoring it with Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell, who's a veteran, and he was a sergeant who almost got killed during the January 6th insurrection, and wrote a great piece for the New York Times opinion section. I was betrayed by President Trump. So while Trump was announcing his bid at age, you know, in his 70s to run for office again, the real hero, Aquilino Gunnell, can no longer be on the police force based on injuries he sustained trying to defend democracy. So I'm excited. In fact, I'm actually, the event I'm doing in LA tonight is with my Counterpoint editors for that book. So I'm excited.
Oh my goodness. You have done so many incredible books and stories and helped so many writers. I just have to read you one sentence I loved so much from your forgiveness book, which was, "Forgiveness takes back your power. You refuse to let someone else's misdeeds rattle your soul any longer." And I think the book you're working on now and the class you're doing is really helping people change their lives. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And if anyone wants to email me, four of my books are about addiction. So now that I quit all my other addictions, I'm addicted to email. So it's profsue123@gmail.com. And if you email me at night, I always swear to God, I get back to people because I have to cold call and cold email so many people myself that I feel like it's a karma thing.
And also, where else, is there a particular social media or do you have a website? Where's the best place for people to find you?
Yeah, so there's a website, which is Susan Shapiro Net, and I'm on Facebook and Insta and Twitter. I like all of them.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much for spending this time with me. Congratulations on the new book. And I'm going to sign up for your class too.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great timing. See you later.